Hello, America, and welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. It's our podcast. Got a great one for you today. All the coverage that you need on what happened in New Hampshire yesterday. Also, there's a new name for the coronavirus because we found out now that WHO is very concerned that coronavirus just sounds too scary and is going to people are going to start demonizing the Chinese. So we're going to get we're not working on a cure yet. But they do have a new name for us, and we're going to give that to you today on the podcast. Also, I realized that, you know, that grumpy old man that used to live and used to yell at you all the time, you know, as a kid, that never seemed to ever die or get older. He was just always old. It's Bernie Sanders, and I'll explain my theory on today's podcast.
And don't forget to sign up and subscribe to Stu Does America. It's available now in podcasts everywhere. If you're in the podcast app, click over and subscribe to it right now. And of course, don't forget, tonight is the big debut of the new format of the TV show, hour-long.
Yeah, hour-long, and it is a deep dive on the issues of the day. Today, we look in China and the too-close-for-comfort relationship between China and the Bidens.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
It came out very much like Iowa did. Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg slugging it out for number one and number two. I thought these numbers spoke volumes. America, the Democrats, don't want a socialist. You'll notice that Elizabeth Warren, her numbers went down. Bernie Sanders didn't pick any of those numbers up. Amy Klobuchar clobbered Joe Biden. And Pete Buttigieg is being viewed as a moderate, even though he's not. You start to get rid of Joe Biden and Michael Bloomberg or, you know, Amy Klobuchar. You get rid of the so-called moderates, and Pete Buttigieg would have clubbed Bernie, just clubbed him to death. And to me, that's something that we need to talk about. Also, there's something else the media is missing. Donald Trump more than doubled Obama's 2012 New Hampshire vote total. There was not a lot of passion for Barack Obama in 2012. He still won, but there wasn't a lot of passion. Donald Trump has doubled those numbers in New Hampshire. That says the people who are for Donald Trump are on fire for Donald Trump. The turnout for the youth, 18 to 30 year olds, was actually down by 2 or 3 points from the 2016 election. They expected it to be 20 points higher. There is no revolution going on here. This is not a big socialist revolution. It's happening in the Twitter sphere. It's happening online. It's happening on MSNBC. But it is not happening in our communities when New Hampshire isn't even putting 10 or 15 points in front of Pete Buttigieg. We go to Steve Dace from the Steve Dace program here on Blaze. He follows this program live every day. Wanted to see and get his feel on what happened in New Hampshire last night. Hi, Steve.
Morning, Glenn. And, you know, the big takeaway I see is the winning vote total Bernie Sanders had compared to what we've seen in recent cycles when there's been multi-candidate fields. Like what Sanders did 4 years ago is irrelevant because it was just him and Hillary head-to-head.
Correct.
But if you go back to 1996, you'll see a pattern, and that is whenever the winning vote total is depressed in its overall amount, that party loses. Buchanan in 96 won New Hampshire with less than 57,000 votes, for example. And then if you go back, and it doesn't really matter who wins, like McCain won New Hampshire in 2000, but his vote total was over 115,000. And then you saw George W. Bush ultimately win that election. So whichever party has a surge in the vote total of its winner, Donald Trump was well over 100,000 back in 2016, for example. Whichever party sees a surge in the vote total of its winner in New Hampshire tends to go on and win in November. And what you're looking at with Bernie Sanders is what I was telling you back in Iowa. This is 2012, but there's no Mitt Romney. They thought that was going to be Joe Biden, and they don't have that candidate right now. And so Bernie Sanders is winning, pardon the Soviet pun, a bunch of Stalingrads here. He's winning wars of attrition because his base shows up no matter what, while everybody else is sort of figuring out, hey, who else are we going to go with? Is it Rick Santorum? Is it Michelle Bachmann? Is it Rick Perry? Well, now the names are Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar, who nobody knew what a Klobuchar was a month ago. So big picture takeaway for your audience. They've got the left media and the Democratic Party has between now and Super Tuesday on March 3rd to take him out. If you go to the calendar on Super Tuesday, there's a lot of southern states there that Pete Buttigieg has no chance to win. All right. And so if Bernie Sanders wins just as New England states and California, he's going to be the nominee. And you're going to see them begin to start making peace with it and retconning him from March 4th thereafter. But between him now and March 3rd, it is open season on Bernie Sanders, and they've got to come up with a candidate that they can rally behind that's not him.
Do you think that's Pete Buttigieg?
No. I think Pete Buttigieg is largely a fascinating – the same people that voted – the same white suburbanites and exurbanites who voted for Barack Obama without knowing what a Jeremiah Wright was or betting his record because they wanted to break the racial barrier is who's voting for him now because they want to – he's the virtue signaling candidate of this cycle. They just want to say, hey, I'm not homophobic. But if you look at the college campus communities and those places, the urban areas, he doesn't have a lot of support there. And now we're going to go to South Carolina. He has no chance to win there. And then we go other than the Nevada caucuses, there's going to be a lot of southern states here, a lot of black voters who are socially conservative. He's a no-go, no-fly zone right away. And I think you're going to see him remain relevant because of what he's already done. But there's not too many states between now and Super Tuesday that when you look at the calendar, you think, yeah, I think Pete Buttigieg could win there.
So who is there? Because I'm watching Amy Klobuchar. She is just not somebody who's going to win. I mean, I watched her last night give her speech, and it's just that I just don't see a President Klobuchar. So who is it?
I think that's the problem. I don't think there is a logical one. I think Michael Bloomberg, you know, I mentioned to you this a few weeks ago. I think his play was for Super Tuesday to start see if I can buy a primary wins in places like Oklahoma and et cetera, with huge, massive television buys. But the problem is, you know, he was a terrible Republican. He's an even worse Democrat. He's not an inspirational figure at all. He's even more socially awkward than Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. This is why I think I've been tweeting out for the last couple of weeks, Glenn. This is Thanos. I am inevitable. I believe Bernie Sanders is inevitable because everything you just said about the Democratic Party is true, but that's why he's inevitable, Glenn. They have played footsie with the likes of Bernie mm-hmm. Sanders and these folks mm-hmm. to club people like you and me for 30 damn years. Mm-hmm. And now the camel's nose is not under the tent. The whole torso, the tail, the backside, it's all in the tent now. And they can't figure out how to consolidate. A true ideological moderate would crush him. But they're not capable as a party of permitting one. I mean, Andrew Yang put out one moderate position on abortion 24 hours ago and was excommunicated by the white woke brigade. And so everybody we call a moderate, I mean, Pete Buttigieg wrote in college his political idol was Bernie Sanders. All right. So everybody we call a moderate is actually a leftist, too. They just don't Nikita Khrushchev shake their fist at you like Bernie Sanders does. So,
but isn't that a reason why Pete Buttigieg could do well? Because he is that leftist, but he just is in much softer, nicer, younger packaging.
Yes, if he were Governor Buttigieg or Senator Buttigieg, but the problem we have right now is if we're going to be blunt. The only reason the mayor of a town as big as Cedar Rapids, Iowa, is in this race is because he's gay. And that right now is the number one intersectionality victim group in the Democratic Party. And so that's gotten him where he's at now. But now we reach where we go, where the map pivots south, and we go to, that's the biggest argument against him. And so what got him in the door in Iowa and New Hampshire and made a whole bunch of people say, yes, I finally get to convince MSNBC I'm not a homophobe, is now what is too expensive of a cover charge for him to pay to go into the bar from South Carolina, Alabama, and all those states down south between now and Super Tuesday. His biggest strength becomes his biggest impediment.
So I have a different view on Pete Buttigieg and people and, the, you know, hey, I'm not a homophobe. I think that's already been decided. I think that's over, you know, for the most part, except with the real diehard extremists. And it's kind of like had its day and we, you know, we've all accepted everybody and yada, yada, yada. It's not that is not the noose it used to be. You say one thing wrong and it used to be an absolute noose. Now it's kind of divided, I think, on the left to where there are others that are saying, you know, why are you getting all the special details and the special laws and the special everything? So I think it's a double-edged sword inside of his own quiver of, yes, he's gay, but yes, is he an extremist like we have seen in the past? And so I think it works both ways on that. I really think Pete Buttigieg is the Jimmy Carter of this generation. He could go a long way just being the anti-Trump. Look, can't we all get along? Can't we? Nobody cared about Jimmy Carter except he's just a simple peanut farmer, and he was a preacher, and he just loves the Lord, and he'll carry his own luggage. He's not like that evil Nixon and Ford. I think there's a swing, and the swing that I think people are hungry for is A, don't be Donald Trump. And they've beaten people and beaten people and beaten people, and I think there's a chance that even they are seeing, I don't want that divisiveness. I don't want the Nancy Pelosi and the just beating people over the head. I want to win, but I would like a uniter, not a divider. And I think that if Pete plays it right, and I think he did last night in many ways, if he plays it right on, hey, I just want us all to come together, I think that could be effective for him. Disagree?
Somewhat. I think you're correct about the rivalry within the Democratic Party. And, you know, the same week that we had the first gay marriage ruling from the Supreme Court, they struck down the Voting Rights Act of 1964. And what a lot of people on the right don't know is the intra-party dynamic on the left. There's a massive problem between the homosexual activists and the black community, because it is seen as if this group has put them, pardon the pun again, to the back of the bus here on the intersectionality chart.
Yep.
If Pete Buttigieg is the Democratic nominee, mark my words, Donald Trump is going to get the best voting total of blacks by a Republican presidential nominee since before the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Okay.
Mark my words.
All right.
Okay?
So hang on just a second. I want to come back in 1 minute because I want to ask you the road to not having Bernie Sanders is a dicey one, especially if the Democratic Party knows what you just said, which I believe. Then what? Then how do they manage this? And what's the aftermath? We'll go to... So, Steve, let me start with the question of how does the Democratic Party, which... I completely agree with you. I found some old audio. We should play that today. Found some old audio of me in 2004 warning the Democratic Party. Once they put Michael Moore in the presidential box with Jimmy Carter in 2004, I said, you people are out of your mind. He's a socialist. You think you're using him. He's using you. He's going to come back and the socialist will eat you for breakfast. And you watch. And here we are. how do they untangle themselves from these very dedicated radicals, revolutionaries, and hold things together?
I don't think that they can. I think you know, to quote the former president's leftist pastor, their chickens are coming home
to roost.
Glenn.
Yep.
Yeah. I think eventually, you know, do not be deceived. God will not be mocked. You will always reap what you sow, right? And I think that you're watching this now, and I don't think there's a way out of this, because their only real inspiring alternative is a guy that actually exposes the wedges of their constituencies all the more. If you look at all of the black and brown polling in this race, even down to the college-age kids, where they've been totally worked over by the sexual revolution, the lowest polling candidate of all black and brown peoples of any age group is Pete Buttigieg. And so when you put him as the alternative, you're actually exposing this schism and fracture all the more. That's why I don't think they have a way out of this.
So you think they're going to run Bernie Sanders?
I think they're going to run. I think they're either going to run Bernie Sanders. And if we look at the primary calendar between now and March and the end of Super Tuesday, tell me what states, maybe Colorado, maybe Virginia, and that's about it, of those 14 states that are going to be going between now and March 3rd, that Pete Buttigieg can win. If Bernie wins New England, the rest of those New England states, California, you know, if he wins California and they don't give him the nomination, that's their headquarters.
Yeah, no.
So I think they've got a couple of weeks to try to figure out some kind of Hail Mary pass. And then I think you're going to see them just begin to make peace with it, because they recognize that. Go back to the first interview you and I did on this cycle back in January of a year ago. And I said the biggest challenge Democrats have is they want to run the election of 2028 and 2032. Mm-hmm. But we're not there yet demographically. Mm-hmm. And so they may just decide, you know what, we'll eat it like we did with McGovern. We'll eat it, you know, like we have in other cycles. Because ultimately, we know that we're controlling the arc and trajectory of the Overton window in history here. And once Donald Trump is gone, there is not another Republican who dares to stand against us on this cultural level, because they're all afraid of our media. My guess is that's the play they make beginning on March 4th, if they can't take Bernie out.
So you think they're still confident in the long run? Because I will tell you, with the exception of the demographic shift here, and that also will play against them soon, because you see the ones coming behind the millennials are very conservative, very active, and are learning what they should be learning. I think we have a new generation of conservatives coming up that are unlike anything else. You think that the Democrats are still confident in this socialist future?
I think the ones that are coming in the next generation are, and it's their religion, and they're going to play out this self-actualization into its ultimate outcome. That's what I think.
Thank you so much, Steve Dace. You can get all of his analysis following this program every day on Blaze TV and Blaze Radio. And don't forget, tonight, 9 p.m., a brand new series starring, yes, little old me. Tonight, China and Joe Biden.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and you're listening to the Glenn Beck program. If you like what you're hearing on this show, make sure you check out Pat Gray Unleashed. It's available wherever you download your favorite podcasts. All right, let me give you some good news. First of all, on the coronavirus, I'm gonna give you all of the details on the coronavirus here in just a second, at the bottom of the hour. But I want to start with this, because this is, I mean, when you think of coronavirus, what is it that you have been most concerned about on the coronavirus?
I mean, just the massive spread and dying, I would say. That'd be kind of number one on the list.
What was number two?
It was pretty much just the one.
Well, this shows how out of step Stu is. Mm-hmm. The number one concern on the coronavirus is that it is something that is targeting the Asian community. Its name, apparently, according to the WHO, is making people look at that and saying, oh, this is an Asian problem, and they're afraid that racism will pop up, and there'll be all kinds of problems because of how Asian it sounds. To me, what? I think anybody who's not paying attention to it would think that it's a Mexican beer virus.
Yeah, and that's been shown in search results. And
Overshadowing the human toll, you know, in actual death is the human toll of racism. So yesterday, the coronavirus has officially had its name changed to a now politically correct name that has taken the word corona and disease and put them together. So it's now COVID-19. You will not be hearing on this program, we are not haters. You will not be hearing about the coronavirus. You will be now hearing about COVID-19. That is the official name, and it has nothing to do with China. Pay no attention to China. You haters. That's a serious story. Serious story.
I mean, how on earth do we get through these things?
We don't. We don't. We deserve to die of little Chinaman disease. You can call it whatever you want. COVID-19, coronavirus, bat soup is bad for you disease, whatever. We deserve it. If we are more concerned about what we're naming it.
That's real political correctness, right?
Oh, that's our special next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, we're COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And the real theme of the show is big governments kill. That's what they do. And sometimes they do it with compassion, but they kill because big governments only care about the mass. And look at what's happening in China. And this is an example of it. COVID-19, you are spending. Can you work on a cure? Who is like, you know what? Put the scalpel down. Put the test tubes down for a minute. Can we talk about the name? The name is scaring me. Who is saying that? Okay, let me give you some good news. How does it feel to you, this fight against socialism in America? This fight against racism in America? Does it feel like we're winning? We're making progress?
It seems like the party's going further and further left.
Mm-hmm.
To a degree that almost unthinkable. I mean, we've used this example before, but Bernie Sanders in 2013 proposed Medicare for All and could not get a single co-sponsor on the bill. Now, everyone in the race, the 50,000 people who ran, are pretty much on board.
All right. And it seems like Bernie Sanders and all of the Democrats, they're all socialists. All of them are socialists, right?
Seems like it.
They're at least holding on to the socialist truck on a skateboard. They're just, you know, they're skating behind that truck, right? Let me give you from 1958. And these numbers are 1958, 1983, 2007, 2015, 2020. Gallup poll. The percentage that would vote for a person who is black. I'm going to give you this, the raw American numbers. In 1958, it was 38%. That's remarkable. In 1983, it was 77%. Today, it's, 2007, 94. Then in 2015, 92. Then in 2020, 96.
And to be clear, the 92 is just because there was a black president that half the country didn't like.
Yes.
Right? So it degrades a little bit just on that.
Catholic, I'm just going to give you the 1958 number to the 2020 number. Catholic, 67% would vote for a Catholic in 1958. 95% would vote for a Catholic now. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Hispanic, we didn't even poll it in 1968, but it is now 94%.
Mm-hmm.
Jewish, 63% to 93%. Women, 54% to 93%. Evangelical Christian, they didn't poll it until 2015, 73 to now 80. So now let me help you out here. Mm-hmm. Black, Catholic, Hispanic, Jewish, women, all in the 90s. Evangelical Christian is 13 points behind any of those others.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. That's not the right doing that.
No, no. Gay and
lesbian. Tolerance, though, Glenn.
Gay and lesbian. Started taking that in 1983. 29%. Then in 2007, 55%. Then 2015, 74%. Now 78%. Under 40. We've never pulled it until now. Under 40 is 70%. Over 70.
That's a short. I mean, because it's got, you got to be 35 in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. a short little window there. Beats yep. right in the middle of it.
Over 70, only 69% of Americans want to vote for somebody over 70. Muslim, 66. Atheist, 60. The last one is socialist, 45. Now, let me give...
Still really high, but I think but you're giving me that as listen, good news, right?
Yeah, I'm giving this to you as good news, okay? Still really high. But willingness to vote for candidates with diverse characteristics by party ID. Okay. The views of political independence, I'm reading directly from the research. Now, wait until you hear this. The views of political independence fall midway between those of Republicans and Democrats for several candidate types, including socialist, with less than half of independents saying that they would vote for such a person. Independents are closer to Democrats than Republicans, and their greater reluctance to support an evangelical Christian candidate. In the greater willingness to support a candidate who is a woman, gay, lesbian, somebody under 40, a Muslim, or an atheist. As the 2020 Democratic presidential primaries get underway, listen to this, it may be instructive to know that little prejudice stands in the way of Democrats, as well as national support for candidates who happen to be Catholic, Hispanic, Jewish, or female, especially young or advanced in age, could pose minor appeal problems. Being gay or lesbian, Muslim, atheist, or a socialist wouldn't cause much stir among Democrats, but these candidates could have difficulty attracting support from Republicans and, to a lesser extent, from political independents. So who has the problem here?
Republicans, clearly.
Republicans, Republicans. Let me give this to you. You're going to have little prejudice. You're going to be facing little prejudice if you are running for the Democrats. Republicans aren't going to stand in your way, but there is some prejudice there. If you happen to be Catholic, 95 is the number for Republicans saying that they would vote for a Catholic out of 100, 95. Hispanic, 90. Jewish, 92. Or female, 86. Especially if you're young or advanced in age. 73 is for advanced age, okay? Republicans, 73. That number for Democrats is 66. So you're going to pose some opposition from attracting a Republican. They're at 73% acceptance. You're at 66. Then... you're going to have real problems if you're gay or lesbian, because this is real. It won't cause a stir among the Democrats, but these candidates are going to have a really hard time attracting anybody because they're so diverse. But anybody else, you're a Republican, you're a bigot. Being gay or lesbian, that's at 89%. Let's see. If you were Catholic, it was 95 for the Republicans. Hispanic, 90. Jewish, 92. Female, 86. Being gay or lesbian is 89. Muslim, 88. Atheist, 69. Socialist, 76. All of their numbers are lower than the ones that they were saying earlier are going to really cause a problem. It's very divisive, right. And these people won't do it. They're more bigoted than the Republicans are on the things that they say they're all for. Gay, lesbian, Muslim, atheist, socialist, 76%. The point that I get out of this is there is not a big movement for socialism. There is not this grand divide, except beginning with evangelical Christians. Both sides with gay and lesbian, both sides under the age of 40, both sides over 70, One side, really, I mean, it's 42 to 88 for Muslim, atheist 41 to 69, and socialist 17 for the Republicans and 76 for the Democrats, but only 45 for independents.
Even that, though, is remarkable. Almost one out of every five Republicans is fine with a socialist president.
I know, that's crazy.
That's an incredible number. It really is. It's interesting, too, that divide where you have characteristics, religion, or lack thereof, sort of grouped together, because there is a difference there, right? Like, saying you won't vote for someone because of black skin is a really, I mean, psychotic, old-timey view. Mm-hmm. The idea that you wouldn't vote for someone because of their religion, well, religion is largely a collection of beliefs that informs the way you act, right? That's a much more... Now, I don't, you know, there's always someone, right? Like, but if you were to say like atheist, a lot of people would not, and that was one of the least popular ones on there, to take that as an example. And you might say to yourself, well, atheism is a system of beliefs that might not lend itself to support my view of religious liberty, right? Mm-hmm, now, we all know, Penn Jillette would be a big defender of religious liberty, and he's an atheist. But we've all met atheists that would do that, but that's not necessarily inherent in the ideology. In a way, what is a religion but an ideology?
Right.
Right? So, at least as it applies to public policy. So, it's a big difference there. And they lump all that stuff together. It's an interesting thing that is always included in these polls because it really does, I think, for a lot of people, it's going to indicate how someone would act because you know that's how you would act, right? Like, if you have a religious foundation, it sets the foundation for the way that you deal with whatever issue you're talking about, where skin color should not be that way. And yet the left treats skin color that way. You know, they talk about how important every cultural difference is and how that is inherent. Like, skin color, it's not inherent in that at all.
No.
That's not the way that's supposed to be.
No. No. But the good news is, I think, if you saw last night, Bernie's numbers are not turning out.
No.
They're not turning out. There is a revolution going on, but it is a very small group of people. It's not what you are led to believe by the press. It is still small, but it's uncommonly large for America to be seeing this. But it's still a small number, and it's being foisted upon us by a very small group of, quite honestly, very powerful people. Because they are connected, very powerful forces in our universities and in television and broadcast. But it's only feeling like we're overwhelmed by socialists because the Democrats are being overwhelmed by socialists. They have let this small group of rebels, America haters, constitutional imbeciles take over. And that's why you feel it's choking, because it's choking them to death. If you're a Democrat, you really need to wake up, because it's choking your party to death. And it's a small number of people doing it.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. So do you remember that old man that lived down the street that all of us kids were afraid of? And sometimes you would add maybe 5 or 6 minutes to your walk home just to take the route that didn't pass his house. You know, you would opt for the house with a Rottweiler that was on a chain, and the chain looked a little rickety, and there was a big hole in the fence in the shape of a former classmate. You remember that house? You'd walk by that house because that old man was sitting in that house, and it was like he was just waiting for you. He was just waiting. His door seemed to always be just a little open, just a little bit of a crack. He was like ready to pounce when you walked by. And he was He was old when our parents were our age. He was the guy that our parents were like, oh, I remember. I remember cranky old Mr. Wilson. You'd be like, he was old then? Yo, yeah. He'd come out and yell at you. And he's still doing it. I don't know. Maybe there's another guy that's a vampire or a Highlander. I don't know what it is, but that guy won in New Hampshire last night. New Hampshire. Because you know Bernie Sanders, after he gave his speech, he wanted to get into the car and he was, you know, firing up the old Buick. And he was like, oh, why aren't there any dials on the radio anymore? Why aren't there dials? And he couldn't hear. He couldn't figure out how to get the radio reports on how he won. And everybody in the car was like, radio, what is that? It's the same guy. That same guy that would yell at you all the time, and you would see him and he would be in shorts and black socks and he'd have black shoes on, but they were like the really high knee socks that, you know, only old guys in suits would wear. And you can't imagine him in a suit because, I mean, did they have suits back when he was a kid? When he was working? That had to be, what, 100 years ago? And now he's like, these shoes are comfortable. These are the shoes everybody should have. It's Bernie. He was trying to get everybody to wear those comfortable shoes because they never wear out. I bought these shoes back in 1954. They never have worn out. Everybody should only wear these shoes. And you can borrow my socks. No, 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 no. You ruffians in your tennis sneakers. You'd come to his house if you were brave, or if you were the new kid that moved into the block, or you were just stupid. You would go to his house on Halloween, and he'd open the door. What do you want? It's Halloween. We're all dressed as... And then you'd see him in the happy mode. He'd look at the kids, and he'd be like, happy. I mean, you wouldn't know it because his face didn't change. And he would still say, I got nothing, and slam the door. And you know that guy is the guy who wants the big government, because if you were ever playing baseball, if you were ever playing kickball, any of that stuff, that was the guy who was like, you kids, I'm calling your parents. I know your parents, and they're not going to like it. Yeah, because they're scared of you too. So you know he was the guy that wanted rules on everything. He is the guy. He was a progressive. He had to be. He wanted everything. I'm calling the cops on you. I'm walking down the street. I'm whistling. No whistling around my house. And when you were there on Halloween and he closed the door, I got nothing. Door closed. You know he was walking back to his one chair with a lone TV in the room, and he's eating a TV dinner, and he's like, everybody, these kids, they all want free stuff. That's Bernie Sanders, man. That is who won last night in New Hampshire. The guy who's going back to his TV dinner alone, watching that TV and that old ratty chair that is comfortable in my comfortable shoes, and everybody should wear these black comfortable shoes, and stop knocking at my door for free stuff. And yet, he's promising everyone somebody else's stuff for free. Thus endeth the lesson. I thought I would just pop that in today because I realized it last night when he was happy. And yet he looked angry, and I thought, I've seen him before. That's Mr. Wilson. Yeah, there's only one guy. He was in your childhood, our parents' childhood, and now he wants to be president of the United States. That's all there is to it. By the way, Klobuchar is now going to expand her campaign after a strong New Hampshire primary. She sucked. No, did you see her speech?
I think she's really bad.
Yeah.
You know, she has a great resume. She has a great electoral history. She pretty much blows everybody out everywhere she's ever been.
Okay, well, maybe.
But she also says, I mean, if I have to hear one more time mm-hmm. that she announced her campaign in a snowstorm, I'm going to right. jump off of a building.
I thought it was just me.
She says it
every time.
Why do we care what the weather was when you started talking about your campaign? Why on earth would we care about that? You live in Minnesota. Of course it was snowing. There's no other options.
Get off my lawn in the snow. Get off my lawn.
It's really annoying. And she's very bad at the... She does... Kamala Harris did this too, where they come up with these lines in, you know, on the bus or in their focus groups or whatever that they think are really, really effective, and they continually repeat them over and over again in every media appearance, every time you see them. Every time she walks out, she says something like, I may be Klobuchar, and I'm going to be Donald Trump.
Right?
Just like, oh, and you're like, oh. Can you even attempt to say it like a human being would say it? Can you even try?
Or, you know, I'm sorry. I have no problem. I have no problem voting for a woman. I would have voted for, what's her?
She Hillary Clinton.
Heels and the.
Oh, for you. Kamala Harris. No. I know
no,
you.
No, you know the woman.
Imelda Marcos. Woman. No.
Carly Fiorina. Yes, I would have voted for Carly Fiorina in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Okay. I really liked Carly. Okay. I think she was a real constitutional conservative. Didn't sound like it at the beginning, but I think she really was. And she had the guts to do it. I loved her. But, you know, there is something about some women, just like some guys. You know, mm-hmm. you listen to some guys and you're like, their voice just grates on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some people that have radio shows that didn't last long in radio show because their voice just grates on you. Klobuchar is one of those people. Hillary Clinton was one of those people where it's just like, I'm gonna tell you right now. That's all you hear. That's not necessarily the way they sound. What you hear is, I'm gonna tell you to pick up your socks.
This is the sexism yes. we've been talking about.
Yes.
No, but I mean, Elizabeth Warren, I think, and again, we're naming every female candidate here. No, Kamala Harris didn't have that.
Kamala Harris doesn't have that.
No.
I think Elizabeth Warren has something else different. I think she has.
She has almost like a teenaged puberty male voice. It's always cracking. It's got that, hi, Elizabeth Warren. She almost has that thing going on, which is a very strange.
So is it like a Katharine Hepburn thing? Is it like,
could be.
You old poop? Is it kind of like that?
Possibly.
That's what I would like Elizabeth Warren to say. If she got into a debate, she should just use all the old Katharine Hepburn lines from like on Golden Pond. Where, hey, you old poop, stop it now.
It's working better than what she's doing now.
Anything would.
But there is that. And look, this happens for a lot of people. I mean, women will say that it's sexist. But you look at it and I bet
Barack Obama had the same kind of thing, except he had it with catchphrases that would drive you out of your mind after a while.
He was better at least at pulling them off. Every candidate says similar lines at different speeches, and everybody has their go-to phrasing. There's something about Klobuchar though; it's very stilted. She's memorized the way she thinks it's supposed to sound, which is not the right way, and she repeats it the same way every single time, and that is really irritating.
Stilted. How can you tell next to Elizabeth Warren?
Oh, and Warren is.
I
the
mean,
same
Warren
way.
Is.
She's bad like that.
Warren
too.
Is like a grandmother that wants all of the teenagers to love her.
Mm.
And she's not like that cool grandma or that cool grandpa that is just like everybody does love you. You know. She's really trying. She tries too hard. And so you're like, okay, creepy lady, that's enough. You know, I'm just hip with you kids, too.
Hello,
I'm just,
fellow kids.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, wow, those are snazzy sneaks. Whoa. You know? And she thinks she's being cool. That's the problem with Elizabeth Warren, for me, is she's trying so hard.
So hard.
So hard.
So hard. And I don't understand. I mean... it does feel like the Klobuchar, the Clomentum that we're seeing
the Clomentum,
now.
Clomentum, I like that.
Yeah, that is
just... Because now we don't have Jomentum.
No, Jomentum is...
Jomentum is done.
Crashed and burned.
Done, yeah.
The Jomentum ran out over the ocean, unfortunately, and crashed into the sea.
I have a feeling the Joe Biden And it's appropriate, but the Joe Biden career is going to be remembered a little like the Hindenburg in the end.
Yeah.
Sure, it might have been great floating around for a while, but once it got over its target, it just burst into flames.
It's true, though, and I think Klobuchar almost benefits from being so bad for so long. Like Beto, for example, comes out and he has his big run and then falls apart. Kamala Harris has a big run and then falls apart. Elizabeth Warren has a big run and falls apart. All these people had these rises and then falls. Well, Klobuchar was smart. She never had the rise.
Yeah.
She just didn't do anything
I'm
for
just,
6 months.
I'm not better. I'm not worse. I'm just exactly the way I was in the snowstorm. Everyone, I'm only looking good because everyone else is burned to the ground.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is the problem because nobody's really taking it. Everybody's like, okay, well, I'll try her maybe.
Right. We're like, well, we got a socialist.
Yeah.
You got Buttigieg, who's like 12 years old. I think he's rode his bike to the rally.
Jing, jing. I got a new bike bell, boys.
And who else are we going to have? Well, Klobuchar, we haven't heard anything bad about her yet because we haven't heard anything about her yet. So let's try that one.
I'm telling you, it is shoe shopping. They are like women shoe shopping. They're going to try them all on, and in the end, they're going to go, you know, I don't think I need new shoes.
That the sexism is there again. Look at that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And I'm going to say it. Coronavirus. I don't care. I don't care how anti-Asian that is. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to call it COVID-19 now.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.